Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 43. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Uvacha cha sayantyasya vandana nayanam sati uchatam uchatam esha brahmano nitaram guru. She could not tolerate Ashvatthama's being bound by ropes. And being a devoted lady, she said, "Release him, for he is a brahmana, our spiritual master." Purport: as soon as Ashvatthama was brought before Draupadi, she thought it intolerable that a brahmin should be arrested like a culprit and brought before her in that condition, especially when the brahmin happened to be a teacher's son. Ashvatthama, Arjuna arrested Ashvatthama, knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so, but both of them condemned the murderer without consideration of his being the son of a Brahmin. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is called an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of the shastra and helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Ashvatthama failed to discharge the duties of a brahmin or a teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a brahmana. On this consideration, Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashvatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of a shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Ashvatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a Brahmin as a real Brahmin by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A Brahmin is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit of simply being the son of a Brahmin. But in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashvatthama be at once released. It was all the same as a good sentiment to her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotee are never unkind to others, even the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupakatamayam Dadati sapatantikam panchakalpa tarubhyascha kripashindu bhayebhacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. Speaking from my mother's house. Yesterday I came back from South America. Arrived 5:30 in the morning. It was an overnight plane, and then I went to the opening of the ISKCON of Central of New Jersey temple, where you know, several of my devotees, my disciples attend. Especially like to congratulate our Sangha members, Brajaradhe and Gopardhan Bhakta. For being instrumental members in the development of that temple. It was really just astounding. It looks like it's going to be probably one of the best facilities, if not the best facility in North America. I guess they took over an old church rather than build their own temple. And for a fraction of the price, you get probably a better facility than they could have designed themselves. I think church people sometimes have a longer history of understanding what their congregation needs, but it's a huge, temple room. It's probably bigger than temple in Mayapur, or certainly much bigger than the temple in Vrindavan, the space, and incredible altar. I'm probably one of the most beautiful, and of course, I didn't see the deities dressed. I left before that because I only had a couple hours sleep on the plane. I may even go back there if I see the schedule today to take darshan of the deities. Madhupati, he was in Tuaco and just felt he needed more initiative, and he went out himself and went to preach, and this is the result. And as they got a building purchased, from the time practically they purchased it to renovating, and people also like Kulpa Vriksha, I understand it a lot. He's one of the key members there. A lot of work, and the place, it's just going to be absolutely, I love the way it's just situated. Huge parking lot, a big hall for the temple, a courtyard that can be done, and then, a big hall for functions and prasadam separate. And kudos. Congratulations. Just wonderful to see. And, the mercy of Prabhupada, so many wonderful kirtaneers there, the Mayapuris, Gauravani, and some other people. And Brahma Muhurta, did a wonderful job. And Chaturatma was there organizing the elaborate fire yoga. And it was just a wonderful thing to see, And it's only about a half hour from my mother's house, so if I have to stay here, it'd be really nice just to go over there and take darshan of the deities, maybe sit and chant and things like that. Really sorry, very unusual. I missed 3 Sundays in a row for the first time in 10 years. It just, I had my bhakti immersion, and, Sunday, it's part of the schedule, and I couldn't miss that. And then they don't have cell phone reception. And then the next week, they had Virabhadra Ram and Jana Prema Ras, their wedding. And that was also very, very awkward. And then the week after that, I usually, even if I'm a foreign country arrange, but we had a bhakti immersion retreat at Shamashram in Cali, Colombia, where I have a place, and I hope someday some of you can see this. It's just wonderful to be there, It's somehow or other, it's simultaneously in the city and the country at the same time, kind of. There's acres and acres of empty land. There's horses and a horse farm right next door. But at the same time, just make, you know, just drive down the road, make a left and a right, and, you know, the city starts. And it's just a beautiful place, and I really like it because I guess I'm in charge. So I have full initiative to use everything that I've trained my life for in Krishna consciousness, both shastrically and practically and managerially, to help develop what could be a significant project in a place where Prabhupada's movement could use help. And and then I'll get on, because I haven't been here. I'm just touching base, and then we'll get on the philosophy, and I hope you appreciate this too. But I don't know, you know, it's kind of a, like an estate, kind of, rented from someone who very, very much is in favor, and we're able to establish more facilities there. But it has enough room for a horse and stable, and to drive the horse, ride the horse around and exercise it on the property. But it's really beautiful, and it's very well managed. There's only three people that live in the ashram, and it's basically the purpose. And then they have a congregation, and they have morning and evening yoga, 5 days in the morning and 6 days in the evening. And that enough completely maintains the ashram, the rent, the payment of the people who run the ashram, so occasionally they can travel and go to India. Of course, they have their own retreats that they organize on various islands. And the 5:30, there's Mangal Arati, samsara prayers, and then from 6 to 7:30, japa. And who's ever there in the ashram, and they have visiting people that sometimes pay. Who's ever there? It's so nice to see. They sit up with their back straight, being healthy from the practice of yoga, and they chant their rounds, 16 rounds, and the people who stay there follow the principles. And there's a Vaishnav cook that comes, and some lady that helps clean. You know, it's very functional. And while I was there, I held a retreat, and people came even from different parts of the country that were interested. And I guess, you know, they can house about 15 people on the property, and other people lived outside, or they had relatives nearby. And we had a bhakti retreat, and I did a seminar, and 50 people came paying. I mean, it's more than I would get in the bhakti center, but 50 people came paying. And very, this is the educated class of people, which is, you know, we should also reach out to. And in those countries, you know, people like this, you know, rather than become degraded, they tend to become even more pious. A lot of Catholic influence, a lot of piety like that. And while I'm there, I give satsang every day at 10, because there's yoga in the morning from 7 to 9. So at 10, to the people who are staying there, and certainly the residents, I go over one shastra like I'm doing now. And they're very serious and philosophically inclined. And in the evening, before the yoga, I sit to satsang, and people come for questions. And I inaugurated a weekly Gita program, which I'm training the person who heads the ashram to do. So I gave the first two classes on an introduction, and it's just really relishable, and to stay there. And I'm going to focus some energy, and I'm going to make retreats. Going to make retreats from America. I'll probably plan to. So maybe have some bhakti retreats from America there. And anyway, it was just really nice, and the people are very nice, and I'm developing nice relationships. So I went down there. Now, finally, I'm relieved, actually, that I'm so attached to this program here. So we know that Ashvatthama, the son of Arjuna's guru, has killed all the sleeping sons of Draupadi, and there's this conflict going on. Whether he should be killed, even though he's the son of the guru, which entails a certain natural affection. Those who are connected to those who you love, there's a special affinity and relationship and responsibility. And I thought, you know, that lady, when Prabhupada first came to Butler, Pennsylvania, he stayed with this lady, Sally Agarwal, and we love her. You know, and I once saw Prabhupada's son, I saw Prabhupada's sister, I saw Prabhupada's daughter. You know, there's a certain natural affinity for them. And on the other hand, he did something so heinous that according to Shastra, he can't be afforded any special status. So there's this conflict going on. And I think what the conflict demonstrates more than anything else, that in decision-making, there's a subtlety. And when you either become liberally or fundamentally overwhelmed, you forget all subtleties. The truth doesn't neatly fit into political views or political perspectives, you know, as if everything is the letter of the law, or, you know, everything ignores the letter of the law. And in fact, one of the obstacles to bhakti is niyama agraha, which, breaking up the Sunday, translates into niyama agraha and niyama agraha. Too much affection for the rules and too little affection for the rules. I mean, recently what happened is Jayadvaita Swami, he gave a class on kirtan, and he had the view that we should do kirtan exactly the way Prabhupada did kirtan. Prabhupada didn't chant his guru's name during kirtan. I'm not sure I agree with him, but you know, it's an honest and reasonable view. You know, I don't see there's anything wrong, but you know, he's entitled to his view. But you know, people took it to almost like wanting to hang him. You know, a fundamentalism came out. You know, as if there's no subtleties in the world. You know, because he didn't want to chant Prabhupada's name, because Prabhupada didn't chant his guru's name, but it's like a fundamentalism. And no one wants to go into the subtleties of issues. And that's why there's paradoxes, you know, apparent contradictions. That, and to tackle them, rather than trying to make it black and white, but to tackle them, it forces you to get into the real issue involved in it. You know, water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. That's a paradox, you know. But then if you delve into the paradox, you realize that water can be mixed with other substance to make it undrinkable. You're in the ocean. Water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. So it's just... The Bhagavad Gita, there's a war, and Arjuna is asked to, you know, kill, and his guru is on the other side. So, you know, you could be fundamentally saying, no, you know, you can never, well, you honor thy mother and father, thou shalt not kill. You know, so therefore Arjuna shouldn't fight. But no, there's something, you know, there's principles that are deeper, and that's what is the ultimate Dharma, and how do things link up with the ultimate Dharma, which is to come closer to God, and everything's based on that. All rules and regulations are to make decisions to bring us closer to God. So if a rule and regulation on a certain moral principle doesn't bring us closer to God, then it may not be Dharma in a particular circumstance. And there's different levels of Dharma. So these issues are very, very subtle. And I respect people who adhere to the tradition, and I respect people that try to communicate it by innovation. But I'm not as excited about people who innovate and don't respect the tradition, or people who adhere to the tradition but don't try to communicate it. You know, so it's okay to think a little bit and try to reconcile differences sometimes, and find out how both things are true and come to a higher principle. You know, and we see what fundamentalism does to religion around the world sometimes, as we see what liberality can do. You can water it down so that it's no longer has any spiritual potency, or conservatism can make it so cruel that it belies the very principle of religion, which is nonviolence, and which is, you know, developing a certain love for God. So this is actually a very important section of the Bhagavatam, where it shows the reconciliation of two apparently opposing views by a depth of wisdom, this will come at the end, that honors both principles. Honors the tradition and honors the custom, honors the law and honors the custom. It can reconcile things when there's a deeper understanding of why we are following something. If you do things without understanding why we are following something, then you'll be following things that negate the very reason why you're doing them. So there's thoughtfulness and there's faithfulness, and there's cheating, where you can also have your thoughtfulness guided by your agenda of your emotions and hurt, and also veer from reasonability and truth. So, there has to be some integrity, some thoughtfulness, and more than anything else, the sincere desire for truth to guide our lives. And not just dogma. Not just speculation. I guess the biggest thing is taking our motive out of the way. A lot of times fundamentalism is guided by a psychology, as is speculation. You know, it's based on emotional things that happen in our lives that color the circumstance, that color and a truly objective based on Shastra understanding of what a situation is and how we should react. Now, there's another very beautiful point here, and that's Draupadi's response. And even though in one sense it seems condemned, and this often happens, that it's sentimental, it's also glorified because of her purity of heart. Arjuna also was condemned for not fighting, but at the same time, the commentary in Prabhupada points out his purity of heart. You know that even though he may be making the wrong decision, his heart is in the right place. And here what we see is the heart of a devotee, that they really think about others before themselves, even when that person has harmed themselves. At least they force for revenge. The seminar I gave one night in Cali, and I have to say, these South American countries, I don't know. I mean, it almost seems, on one level, people have a better quality of life. Maybe I was just in a particular area, but every month, people are on vacation. You really have to be hard to actually organize a schedule. People, they always have their vacations. But, you know, I wanted to give a seminar that would attract people from the outside, and I give one on overcoming forgiveness, overcoming justified hate, and everyone has that issue. And I was so surprised. I didn't know if like 5 or 6 people will come, whether we'll have the lecture in our small living room at the temple. And I went there, there was chairs, it was packed. 55 people paying $8 a person, which for there, it would be probably, you know, paying $30 or $40 maybe comparatively or something. I don't know, but whatever the case is, the people came, and it's a moral quality. It's an ideal forgiveness, not just something therapeutic. It speaks to peace. It speaks to reconciliation. It speaks to truth. It speaks to compassion. And, you know, it's a controversial thing. I don't want to get it into now, but I'm seeing here also with Draupadi, that's what it reminds us. She just doesn't want to be unkind to anyone, even an enemy, even someone who did something so bad. She just doesn't want to wish bad for anyone. And that's really characteristic of one's heart is pure. In the forgiveness lecture, I tell one story about two Brahmins going across a river, and somehow a scorpion jumps on one of the Brahmins' hands and bites him and falls into the river. And then the Brahmin picks up the scorpion, puts it on their hand, they get bit again, and then again it jumps into the river. And then it gets on the hand, and then again it jumps into the river. So, at the end, you know, he's walking with his friend, and the other Brahmin says to the one who got bit 3 times and picked it up, he said, "Don't you know the nature of a scorpion is to bite?" He said, "By my nature is to forgive." And if you think of a saintly person, it's very difficult for them to harbor hate in their hearts despite someone who has maligned them. I think it's natural when it's a very heinous, evil crime committed against someone you love to harbor some feelings as a manifestation of your love, but resentment comes from the Latin word re, again, sentir, to again feel. So to again feel to again feel there's something kind of morbid about that after some time. After some time. So anyway, it shows Draupadi, her heart. It's just so hard to hate to stay in the heart of someone who's so pure. And it's a noble quality. It's a moral quality. It's a spiritual quality. It's what we expect of great people. That hate does not stay in their heart easily. And if hate does stay in our heart easily, then we have a spiritual or moral deficiency. So we can do one verse today more. Sarahasyo Dhanur Veda Savisargo Pasamyama Astagramas Chabhavata Sikshito Yada Nugrahat. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Dhanurveda, a military science, was taught by Dronacharya with all its confidential secrets of throwing, controlling by Vedic hymns. Gross military science is dependent on material weapons. And finer than that is the art of throwing the arrows saturated with Vedic hymns, which act more effectively than gross material weapons like machine guns or atomic bombs. The control is by Vedic mantras, or the transcendental science of sound. It is said in the Ramayana that Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ram, used to control arrows by sound only. He could pierce his target with his arrows by hearing the sound without seeing the object. So this is a finer military science than that of the gross material military weapons used nowadays. Arjuna was taught all this, and therefore Draupadi wished that Arjuna feel obliged to Acharya Drona for all these benefits. In the absence of Dronacharya, his son was his representative. That was the opinion of the good lady Draupadi. It may be argued why Dronacharya, a rigid Brahmin, should be a teacher in military science. But the reply is that a Brahmin should become a teacher regardless of what department of knowledge is. Regardless of what his department of knowledge is. A learned Brahmin should be a teacher, a priest, and a recipient of charity. A bona fide Brahmin is authorized to accept such professions. One second. I guess this is still Draupadi's arguments. About being obliged to a teacher. So you can see how there are so many principles in Dharma, in religion, and they should be adhered to, but there's also a hierarchy of principles. And if one principle contradicts another principle, you have to see which principle takes precedence. For example, it's considered in the yogic tradition that the foundational principle is ahimsa. So another foundational principle is truthfulness, because yoga means to control the mind, and you have to control the mind in relationship to others, and you don't harm them, and you don't lie to them. But ahimsa takes precedence. If you adhere to truth, and then somebody comes to kill someone else, and they say, "Do you know where he is?" And you do, and you so-called tell the truth, it's immoral. because although you told the truth, you violated the principle of nonviolence and assisted in that. So you really have to know the essence. And what the Gita says is the ultimate essence is to serve God and what brings us closer to God. And that's more important than anything else, actually. But on that principle, you can't just go around killing people, because that won't bring you closer to God, even if you do it in the nature of religion. Of course, here is a different case. It's a war, and he's fighting. And it describes a little bit about, you know, a Brahmin being a teacher, and he can teach anything, even military science, which is kind of a bit unusual, but still, he's a teacher. And how much more subtle it was. And this is our opinion, that when things are more subtle, they may look less grossly technologically advanced, but actually they're more advanced. Like, for example, there weren't books a long time ago. Does that mean the society was primitive? But the Vedas give another thing. It's not that there were no books. You didn't print books because there was an oral tradition and people's minds were so much more evolved to actually learn by hearing. So actually books is a symptom that people are less advanced, that they require them. And same things with sophisticated weapons. Even sophisticated medicine. I mean, I was cured by jaundice by mantra. So it may look primitive, but actually it's more advanced. It's just more subtle. It's less gross. And so it is with the military science. Okay, one more. Esha Bhagavan Drona Praja Rupena Vartite Tasyatmano Dampatyasti Nandagad Virashupipi. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing, being represented by his own son. His wife, Kripi, did not undergo a sati with him because she had a son. So she's thinking. She's feeling someone's suffering is her own, especially since having experienced the suffering of losing children. She doesn't want the wife of Ashvatthama to experience the same kind of loss she felt in relationship with her husband. So she was feeling. I remember, you know, the story of the Amish people that, you know, someone came into the schoolhouse and killed all their children. And they forgave the person. Didn't mean that he shouldn't be punished, but they gave up their, they wouldn't express their enmity towards him or ill will. I'm not sure about that one, by the way. I mean, I just feel sometimes that it's to not express some emotion maybe belies the feeling of love when someone, I mean, I don't want to argue this, but you know, I think sometimes a little time of emotion and moral outrage is normal human emotions, and it becomes, but it's a moral quality to forgive as soon as the proper conditions are set, and that's probably not too long. But besides that particular fact, I mean, it is kind of noble, too, and they wanted to take in these Amish. The wife of the killer in case that, you know, if the killer goes to jail or I don't know if he was killed himself. The same thing when this black church in South Carolina, how deeply spiritual some of these people were. They expressed their profound loss and let the killer know how much pain he caused. But still, they did not want to hold hate in their heart. And they forgave him. And what a beautiful thing that is. So we're seeing with Draupadi what beautiful qualities she has. O most fortunate one who knows the principle of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glamorous family members who are always respectable and worshipful. Mercy! Undeserved! Isn't that a good quality? Mercy, undeserved kindness. If you think of a saintly person, aren't they compassionate? Aren't they merciful? The greatest hypocrisy is we're always begging for God's mercy, but others we don't want pardoned. Others we want them to get what they deserve. We don't want ourselves to get what we deserve. We want to be forgiven. We want to be understood. We want to understand it's circumstantial. We want to just reach out and get some mercy and kindness. But for others, it should be an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But not with Draupadi. Let's see what the purport says. I just can't find it. 1 second. Okay. Almost fortunate one who knows the principle of religion is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members, always respectful and worshipable. A slight insult for a respectable family is sufficient to invoke grief. Therefore, a cultured man should always be careful in dealing with worshipable family members. Yeah, there's an etiquette dealing with people in a superior position by their age, by their qualities, by the relationship we have with them. And that kind of culture is important for learning because wisdom generally comes from people who are superior, more experienced, learned, been around longer. So that conduit is so important. My Lord, please do not make the wife of Dronacharya cry like me. I'm aggrieved for the death of my son. She need not cry constantly like me. Sympathetic, good lady as she was, Srimati Draupadi did not want to put the wife of Dronacharya in the same position of childlessness, both from the point of motherly feelings and from the respectable position held by the wife of Dronacharya. Okay, anybody like to ask any questions? Oh, wait, 1 second. I have it on. Would anybody like any questions? Would anybody like anybody? Hello? Hey, hello? One second. Would anyone like to say hello? If someone could tell me that they heard the class.
Hi, Bill. This is Atmananda here.
Okay, we have a class?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm having an echo here. Okay, thanks. Okay, thanks. Ananda. Anybody else? Hello?
Were you able to hear the class?
Yes, of course.
Okay. By the way, I do have the shoes. Thank you. I got them when I was here. And
good.
It's good. Yeah, it's good to have a good pair of shoes. I'll write you about them. Thank you.
Okay.
And who is this?
Camilo.
Oh, great. You're able to hear the class?
Yeah.
We're
able to hear.
Okay, wonderful. That's great. Good. Okay.
I'm here.
A service of
Say it again. Hi, Krishna.
We are in Vitalamba.
I am also. Really. You know, I told you, like on this plane, about 3.5 hours sleep. But, you know, I went to this temple and it was just to see, I mean, beautiful Radha Krishna coming to New Jersey, and the size of the temple room and the complex they got and all the hard work that people did to make it so beautiful. And one of my disciples, her name is Kadamba, and I saw her there, and they were interviewing people. She just broke down in tears to feel the overwhelm that Radha and Krishna appeared in New Jersey. You know, it was just overwhelming for her, you know, and to see all these devotees that work so hard, and then all of a sudden they get this mercy of this incredible, beautiful Radha and Krishna temple. I mean, it's really spectacular. So they just were overwhelmed, and I just couldn't stay that long because I'd have to drive back and, you know, not getting so much sleep. But I think I may go down today to take darshan too. Okay, great to have you on the Sangha. I'll explain to others that are listening. It's so nice. That was three people from the Columbia, the foundations of that place, will also join our Sangha. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Great. Please excuse me for not being on. Okay, great. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? You know, I think because the temple opened, some of the people from Jersey may have been there. Is Bharati over today? Probably at the temple. Okay. We'll say goodbye for now.
Bunch of couples, to be able 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 to